Support for The Common comes from the law firm of Davis Malm. Whether you're a private business, a public company, a municipality, a nonprofit, or in-house counsel, their business attorneys help achieve your short and long-term goals. DavisMalm.com, DavisMalm.com.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Advocates behind a proposed ballot question that asks if the state should decriminalize certain plant-based hallucinogens, psychedelics, are working to put the question in front of voters on Election Day in November. If successful, people over 21 can use a limited amount of substances like magic mushrooms without worrying about criminal penalties from the state. There is also an effort to get the FDA to approve the use of MDMA in the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. With both these efforts underway, we felt it was time to get trippy with a three-part series that explores the past, present, and future of psychedelics to explore what some decriminalization and its use in mental health treatment could mean for Massachusetts. Now, the first thing we want to do is get into some of the history of psychedelics with one of its most influential advocates, Timothy Leary, and the controversial Harvard Psilocybin Project. Yes, that Harvard. So for this discussion, we have Andrew Green Hannon. He is an adjunct lecturer at Emerson College, and he holds a PhD from Yale University's American Studies program. His research focuses on the American counterculture and the New Left, and he is a local expert on psychedelics. Andrew, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about psychedelics.
Andrew, let's jump in. Tell us, who was Timothy Leary and what was the Harvard Psilocybin Project?
Timothy Leary, when he came to the Boston area, was a moderately successful adjunct lecturer, and he joined the Harvard Psychology Department to follow experiments in behaviorism to build on tools and assessments that he had been working on in California. By the time he left Harvard, he had become internationally infamous as an advocate for the use and enjoyment of psychedelics, including psilocybin, but also LSD, most known for his association as an advocate for lysergic acid diethylamine. His first year there, he takes over teaching a class that is supposed to survey an average American family. They take the tools of assessment from assessing incoming prisoners at Concord MCI for mental illness or at McLean Hospital, again, for forms of mental illness, and they decide to use these tools as a profile of an average American family. The family finds the process of being profiled by the behaviorists of Harvard to be a profoundly traumatizing situation. And the father of the family, who is my grandfather, comes to Leary and says, "What are you doing to my family? You are just upsetting my children and traumatizing my wife." And Leary says, "You are absolutely right. Psychology and the social games that we are playing, the social role of authority that I take over, there is no other way for this to take place other than to be traumatizing to you. I can't keep doing the work that I have been doing. I cannot study behavior anymore. I need to study consciousness." And around this time, a friend of his gives him a Life magazine that's a couple years old and has profiles of Mexican traditional uses of psilocybin and what we call magic mushrooms. And Leary has this crisis of intellectual confidence of, like, I have been doing the wrong thing with the last 20 years of my professional life. I have to abandon behaviorism and study how to change your mind. So he goes to Mexico and he is eating psilocybin by August of 1960 and comes back the following semester. By September, he is saying, "We really need to be studying these." He is telling his friend and mentor, Richard Alpert, who is a full professor at Harvard, "We need to be changing what we are studying. This gives us tremendous insight into the foundations of consciousness."
Understood. And that's the Harvard Psilocybin Project.
That's the Harvard Psilocybin Project.
Got it. And when Richard Nixon was president, he called Leary the most dangerous man in America. Talk to us about how that translated into the criminalization of psychedelics.
Absolutely. To go from the kinds of psychological studies that the Harvard psilocybin project are doing, of the Marsh Chapel example, where they are giving psilocybin to divinity school students in BU's Marsh Chapel on Good Friday to see if they have a religious experience. They do. Everybody dosed has a mystical experience. And to give to prisoners at Concord MCI to see if that has an effect on their recidivism. Those are sort of scientific experiments within the guise of Harvard psychology department, and those are taking place in the early 60s. And by the end of the decade, Richard Nixon is calling Timothy Leary the most dangerous man in America. And it appears we now know that some of that and the criminalization of LSD is out of pure political utilitarian moves by the Nixon administration. Tapes of John Ehrlichman admitting to this came out a few years ago, attempting to fuse the new left, white radicals, black power, and drugs into one thing that they can tilt the drug apparatus on. And that prohibition of psychedelics really comes out of attacks on left political movements and on civil rights rather than any kind of demonstrable social historical harm. Psychedelics aren't completely harmless, but they are, historically speaking, mostly harmless and significantly less harmless than, say, Tylenol or alcohol, drugs that we tolerate to this day. And the largest danger is, you know, the danger to yourself. You absolutely should not be driving, but you aren't really a danger to the larger world for the 8 to 14 hours that you might be tripping. And the Nixon administration sees this as a wedge issue that they can use politically to further polarize the country, and they use it to persecute left political figures. You can see it in the FBI file of people like Abby Hoffman. You can see it in the persecutions of the Black Panthers, that there's an attempt to fuse politics and drugs together. Wow. And the drug war of the sort of following 50 years has been parts of the legacy of that.
Interesting. Thank you for breaking that down for us. I want to zero in on why Nixon would say that. Tell me about Timothy Leary's influence.
Leary becomes wildly influential, in part by being in the right place at the right time. You can see a growing interest in psychedelics of all kinds. There's profiles in Life, popular press, and it's reaching out past the sort of elite research universities where it is initially popular. Psychedelics are first seen as like a tool for thinking, and then later they become a tool for partying. And then by the end of the decade, it becomes associated with youthful excess. Psychedelics are considerably cheaper than alcohol or even marijuana and last for longer. And it is seen as a part of out of control, that young people and youthfulness is a moment of excess, and that participating in civil rights marches, in rock and roll concerts, and LSD are all part and parcel of the whole thing, and if it can be used as a tool to separate effectively people from each other. You can see the federal government drawing upon the earlier models of alcohol prohibition and marijuana prohibition, both of which were heavily racialized and heavily classed in terms of who actually bore the brunt of those kinds of incarcerations, and seeing this is, you know, controls of substances is a useful tool for controlling people.
All right, Andrew, I want to take a break, but when we get back, I want to talk more about Leary's early work at Harvard in Boston. So we'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with local expert on psychedelics, Andrew Green Hannon. All right, Andrew, we're talking about the past of psychedelics through the work of Timothy Leary. With all that said, I want to bring it back here to the local. Boston is a hub of psychedelic research. We have a lot of institutions such as Mass General Hospital researching how psychedelics affect the brain. Harvard has launched its study of psychedelics in society and culture last year, focusing on how psychedelics impact our society. I wonder, in what ways is modern psychedelic research influenced by Leary's early work?
I think Leary mostly serves as a form of inspiration and also as a cautionary tale. The early work on psychedelics that the Harvard Psilocybin Project was doing is scientifically legitimate and academically worthwhile. And then it kind of escaped from the official studies, and Richard Alpert, Ram Dass, began just sharing it with other people, including undergraduates. And I think ethically, we can all decide that drugging students who are underage is ethically not good. Not good. No, not good. So that is no longer done. It has taken a long time for, you know, following those studies and the ethical blowback and then the criminalization for people to be able to study things again. And there has been a lot of sort of rebuilding. There has been a turn in the last 10 years to be quite interested in psychedelics. And the Boston area institutions had a more complicated relationship. I think Harvard University has torn down every single building that Leary ever worked in or set foot in and had a much more embattled relationship with him and did not want to be associated with him until fairly recently. In the last 10 years, they've started acquiring archival history of it, but Leary's archives are now at the New York Public Library rather than anywhere in the Boston area, in part out of this sort of institutional discomfort with Leary himself. Psychedelic studies are taking a turn, and there has been a tremendous amount of very legitimate scientific studies detailing the ways in which it can, you know, help address depression, interactions with artistic creativity, and those kinds of more recent studies. But they've all been done with the sort of cautionary tale of Leary, but also Leary as an inspiration.
Well, you know, it seems like things are taking a turn with psychedelics because in recent years, 8 cities in Massachusetts, including Somerville and Cambridge, adopted some sort of policy that would decriminalize psychedelics.
Yeah.
And tell me, what do you think about this turn?
The change in policy is a recognition that there has been no social harm and that the criminalization did not serve to advance public health policy, and that jailing and criminalizing the taking of psychedelics has not helped anybody. And decriminalization is recognizing that this is not a worthwhile use of police resources. It is not a good way of addressing, you know, any kinds of problems that might arise, and also is fundamentally an acknowledgement that the past 50 years of the drug war on psychedelics was a mistake and unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. What lessons can today's advocates and researchers learn from those previous movements, you know, with Timothy Leary? What can they learn from those when it comes to understanding psychedelics today and where we are? And how might all of that influence the current decriminalization movement?
I think one of the most important lessons that people have taken is an avoidance of kinds of cults of personality and an uncritical reverence for a sort of guru figure. And I think all of us are much more critical of someone taking on that kind of role and much more not interested in taking on it ourselves and suspicious of the kinds of people who might want that self-aggrandizing kind of thing. And
that
as long as the issue is on psychedelics and rather than the person advocating, I think that's the issue, that the lesson that everyone is taking, that we can avoid most of the excesses as long as we focus on the facts, on the drugs themselves, and rather than making it about ourselves. Leary loved his role as high priest of LSD. He just took to it in this fantastic way. It was much more satisfying to him than being an unsuccessful adjunct lecturer ever was. And I think that's maybe one of the biggest lessons is avoiding cults of personalities.
Understood. Well, Andrew, this was a lot. This was an adventure, a trip, if you will.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for all of this, man. This is very informative. So,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
That's adjunct lecturer at Emerson College and local expert on psychedelics, Andrew Green Hannon. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Let us know if you have any thoughts on psychedelics or experiences. Whatever you want to share, hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and I will talk to you tomorrow.